Bolt, reel number 5. Mr. Bolt, you told me that from about 1912 and onwards, when they started using more aeroplanes at Farnborough, the Cody kites went out of use because they became a danger to the aeroplanes. Did the kites get used at all for any purpose after that?
When we finished using Cody kites at Farnborough, because of the danger to the number of machines that were coming into, flying machines that were coming into use, we used to go from Farnborough to Lydd in Kent, where we used to use the beaches with a railway laid on for, and put the pilot kites up in the air for target practice for the Shoeburyness Garrison Royal Artillery.
Will you describe this work for me in detail?
We had a winch that used to run on a railway for 200 or 300 yards along the beach. On the winch, we used to have a Cody pilot kite, which we let up, and when it got to a certain height, the artillery from Shoeburyness Garrison used to fire at as target practice.
Could you tell me something about the groundwork which you did on the airships and balloons when it wasn't possible due to weather conditions to fly them? You've already explained that one of the functions was that of leak detecting. What did that comprise exactly?
When the airships were full of gas, the airship crew were drawn around in a bosun's chair suspended from the catwalk of the shed with leak detectors.
What was a leak detector?
A leak detector would detect any gas escaping from the airship where the hole was too small to be seen with the naked eye.
What kind of instrument was used?
It was an instrument which was known as a leak detector, was carried by the man going around the machine, and immediately he found a leakage of gas escaping, he would mark it with a blue marker ring with a blue pencil, so that the repair section would see the ring and put a patch on the balloon, whether it was by fabric or what do you call it?
What other sorts of things did you do?
When the weather was too bad for flying, a number of NCOs would take a number of men to each section and teach them knotting and splicing and net repairs. Others would be making balloon nets and making hammocks, which
This is very interesting about hammocks. I didn't realise that hammocks were used outside the Navy.
Oh, yes. Hammocks were used by the guard. Instead of sleeping on the floor, they would use hammocks for sleeping in. And when going out with the balloons, at times you would take one or two hammocks for men to lay in by tying them from different trees or posts that they may put in the ground, which was better than laying on damp grass.
I believe there was something of a joke made about a flight by Captain Dawes from Montrose when he had to land through engine failure.
I think one of the funniest stories, which is true, came about in 1912, latter part of 1912. Captain Dawes of Number 2 Squadron, the first aeroplane squadron that was formed in the Flying Corps, were at Montrose in Scotland. Captain Dawes was flying from Scotland one day when he made a false landing between Montrose and Farnborough.
Why did he have to make a false landing?
He made a false landing because the engine was cutting. One of the cylinders was missing. When he landed, he told his passenger, who was a corporal then, an ACH corporal, that he was going to find the nearest telephone to report that he had made a false landing. He told the corporal, who later became a disciplinary warrant officer, that one of the cylinders was missing and went off. The corporal, checking the engine, found that the number of cylinders were still there, and not being a mechanic, he had no knowledge of sparking plugs. When Captain Dawes returned, the corporal said, "Sir, I've checked the engine and all the cylinders are there," which became the joke of the early part of the Royal Flying Corps.
So what Captain Dawes had meant to check was the sparking plugs.
Captain Dawes meant for him to check the sparking plugs, which he would know nothing about. On one occasion at Farnborough, the Gamma went for a training flight and the engine stopped. They could do nothing but signal back that the engine had frozen. They were drifting away from the aerodrome without being able to do anything, when the Willows airship, a very small airship, went up, dropped a tow rope to the Gamma, which was fastened to the Gamma fuselage and towed back to Farnborough. It was a very funny sight to see such a small thing as the Willows towing the much larger airship, the Gamma.
In your experience, had one airship ever towed another before?
In my experience or knowledge, I have never known one airship to go up to tow another one back. When the airships returned to the aerodrome at Farnborough, it came low enough for the tow rope of the Gamma to be dropped and manhandled by the crew, the ground crew. The Willys airship was then released and flew off and landed separately.
Do you remember what kind of speed they could make in tow like this?
Well,
not very much, I suppose.
4 to 5 miles an hour. Mm. I am not quite certain of the date, but the French airship, the Le Bordy, was flown from France to Farnborough to undergo trials before being taken over by the British government. When coming into land, the engines were cut off and the tow rope was dropped. It was going at such a speed that when coming in towards the aerodrome, the trail rope caught on house roofs, broke down quite a number of chimneys. Eventually, the tow rope got tangled up in the railings of the aircraft establishment at Farnborough. It was then manhandled by the ground crew who were waiting for it to be able to bring it safely back down on the aerodrome. When trying to enter the airship shed, some mistake must have been made in the height of the airship shed or the height of the Le Bordy airship. When entering, the balloon part caught a bolt that was sticking down from the catwalk. It ripped a very great hole in the top of the airship, which caused it to collapse. I was one of the ground crew guiding the airship into the shed. When it collapsed, I was covered with the balloon dropping. I got scratched badly by the wiring of the fuselage of the body. Eventually, I crawled out, bleeding very badly. My face and arms were cut. When I eventually got out and got clear, someone standing close by with Captain Maitland asked me if I was hurt. I said, "Can't you see I'm hurt, you bloody fool?" To my astonishment, It was Field Marshal Lord Kitchener who was dressed in mufti.
You mean Field Marshal Lord Roberts?
Field Marshal Lord Roberts. Captain Maitland, who was standing by the side of him, ordered me to be placed under arrest. Lord Roberts said, "No, no, no. I asked a silly question and I got the right answer."